Good afternoon, everybody. Hi. I'm Eric Hansen. I'm a program manager in the big data and data warehousing team in Microsoft SQL Server. And today I'm going to talk about column store performance tuning. So as most of you already know, the column store index is a new feature in SQL Server 2012, which combined with some changes to the way queries are executed can give a phenomenal performance improvement for data warehouse and data mart queries. So today what I'm going to talk about is how to get the most out of the column store. So the column store has some limitations. In general, it works quite well, but there are some situations where it may not perform as well as anticipated. So I'm going to talk to you about how to work around those things and how to correct for them, and in general, how to get the most out of the column store index technology that's new in SQL Server 2012. So before I get too far into it, how many of you have actually tried the column store index hands-on? A few, okay. How many of you do not know much at all about how the column store index works? Okay, about half. Okay, so this is kind of an advanced talk. So I gave a talk last year at this event about sort of introduction to column store indexes. This is going to go into some fairly advanced material pretty quickly. So I will talk about for a few minutes the basics of column store indexes. So that's okay. You know, you should get something out of this talk. But if you find it interesting and it went a little too fast for you, given that some of you are new to column stores, if you on channel 9, the MSDN channel 9 website, there's a video of last year's talk, which is an introduction. So you may want to look at that too to get some of the more basic stuff about column store indexes and then revisit some of the more advanced material. So has anybody actually used column store indexes in a production application yet? 1, 2, 3. Okay. So is anybody developing an application that hasn't gone into production yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, good. So we got a few people who are trying it. Many of you are familiar with it. Many of you are new to it. I'll give you a quick overview of it before we launch into the details of how to tune for column store indexes. First of all, the objectives of this talk are for you to learn how to make query performance go from just good to really outstanding when using the column store index technology. And one of the key takeaways from this talk is that the batch mode of query execution, which I'll tell you about in a little while, is really crucial to the speed ups that you get from the column store. And so you need to look for that in the query plans that are being generated for accessing the column store index data, and make sure that your plans are working in batch mode. And good application design can help you get the most out of the column store and can work around a lot of the limitations. So why should you pay attention to this talk? Why should you be here? Well, on the left, that's a picture of a customer who's got is using a poorly tuned column store application. And on the right, that's a picture of somebody who is using one that's really well-tuned and really performing up to as well as you can possibly imagine getting this technology to perform. So there can be a really big difference, and I'll demonstrate it for you shortly. Also, the column store index is labeled with the term X-velocity. So X-velocity is an umbrella name that covers our new enhanced performance technologies for the relational database for data warehousing and for business intelligence. Okay, so the new in-memory column store technology in analysis services, as well as Power Pivot and the column store index technology in SQL Server 2012 and the relational database, all are part of X-velocity. So I'm going to do a quick demo just so you can appreciate a little bit more about the column store index and the kind of performance that you can get. So right now I'm using a database here on my laptop. This is a pretty good laptop, but it's still a laptop. So it's a four-core laptop, an Intel Core i7, and it has 8 gigs of RAM. The database that I'm using has information about movie ticket sales. It's the Movlia database, something we use for demonstrations. And purchase is a fact table. So it's got a star schema. Purchase is a fact table. It's got 101 million rows in it. So it's a pretty good-sized table for a laptop, all right? And there are two indexes on this table. One, CI date, all right? CI date is a clustered B-tree index on date. So that stores the primary copy of the data. A second copy of the data is stored in another index. It's a non-clustered column store index called NCCI. Okay, so you see the different icon that indicates that the non-clustered index is a little different from the B-tree. So what I want to do now is just run this particular query. This query, it's a two-way join between the media dimension table and the purchase table, which is the fact table. And it's just a simple group by count type query. But it has to scan the entire fact table, right? So you can expect that this could take a while. So let's see how long it takes. Bam, it's done. You see that? It was instantaneous. Okay. So I'm not kidding. It scanned the entire fact table in about a quarter of a second. All right, you want to see the execution plan? Okay, this is the execution plan. So the key thing to note here, let me zoom in a little bit. All right, so on the lower right, you see that's the column store index. It's being scanned. It's a column store index scan operator. And above, we have a batch hash table build. So this is indicating that it's using the new batch mode of query execution, which I'll tell you about in a second. But one thing that's important to note here, I'm putting my mouse pointer over the column store index scan operator. Actually, let me go up here. This hash join operator, I'll put the little mouse pointer over that, and we get all the properties in the tooltip that pops up. Let me zoom in a little bit so you can read that more easily. See, it says actual execution mode is batch. Okay, so in older query execution plans or query execution plans that don't use the column store, the actual execution mode is always row. So what is a batch? So a batch is an object that contains about 1,000 rows worth of data. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But in the older mode of query execution, one row at a time would flow through the query execution pipeline. And the overhead per row was substantial. So just a simple operation like filtering one column in a row against a constant might take 7 function calls in C++, all right? And might actually dereference a pointer or something like that. So the overhead in the code internally in SQL Server was pretty significant. Now, we just iterate through a vector of about 1,000 values. And with very low overhead, the code doesn't do any metadata interpretation, doesn't dereference any pointers, doesn't call any functions. Just in a very tight loop of C code, it'll burn through an array of values from that column containing about 1,000 values for 1,000 rows. And the overhead per row is substantially less, up to 40 times less. And so that is kind of the secret sauce in the column store index technology. It's not just the column store representation, but it's the new query execution mode. So the column store itself actually stores each column in a separate group of pages on disk. So in the older row-based technology, each row was stored within a page. So every column of the row was stored on the same page. It turns out that for data warehouse type applications, there's a lot of advantages to storing the data what we call vertically partitioned, so that each column is in a separate group of pages. And so some of the benefits of that are that you only have to read from disk the columns that your query references. So it's not unusual for a data warehouse fact table to have 20, 30, 40 columns. But most queries only touch 5 or 6 columns. Right? So if you only have to read from disk the columns that you touch, right away you're getting a lot of benefit from that. In addition, the column store index is heavily compressed. Okay? So that the compression combined with the fact that you only have to read from disk the columns that you touch reduces the I.O. tremendously. And then this new batch mode of query execution that I described reduces the CPU instructions required by a lot to do traditional data warehouse queries. So, excuse me. All right, so that I demonstrated the kind of speed up that you can get with the column store index when I ran a query that touched, you know, the entire table. And I'll do it again just to prove it. Okay, in a sub-second time, it scanned the entire fact table and did a group by aggregate query with a single join. Now, there's a hint here. Ignore non-clustered column store index. It's a query hint. It tells it to use not to use the column store index, so it's going to scan the B tree instead. So I just started that one running, and it's going to take a little while. So I just want you to get a feel for the difference here. Okay, so it took 16 seconds to do that with the B-tree, and it took about a quarter of a second to do it with the column store. So I can't emphasize enough, this new column store technology and the new batch mode of query execution is a dramatic improvement in storage and query execution for data warehousing. It's, it might have taken 50 machines to get the same level of performance that I'm getting now on a laptop, okay? So things that people used to buy Teradata for 10 years ago, you can now do on a standard server. You can run queries in a split second that you might have taken 100 nodes to do, 10 years ago. So it's a very dramatic change in query execution. It's kind of a once in a career type change in technology. So it's nice that it's all packaged inside SQL Server. It all looks the same, you query it the same, there's no change in the query language, but under the sheets there's been a dramatic change in architecture. So we just found out that not using the column store makes this query run quite a bit slower. Now, here's another version of that query. It's identical to the one above, but it uses an outer join instead of a regular inner join. So unfortunately, this new batch mode of query execution gets defeated by outer joins. It doesn't kick in, but I just wanted to just show you what's going to happen. So I just changed a tiny bit of text in the query, just changed join to left outer join, and you can see that instead of running in a quarter second, it's taken a while. So it's running, it took 12 seconds to run. So why did that happen? Well, let's take a look at the query plan. Okay, so this query plan, it's scanning the column store index here, but as I hover my mouse pointer over the column store index icon there, you see it says actual execution mode is row. That's why this query ran so much slower. It wasn't running in the batch mode of query execution. So you need to look for that in your query plans. Make sure that the bulk of the work of the query is being done in batch mode. So you saw how dramatic a performance improvement we can get with the column store under the right circumstances, but certain things like an outer join may make the query run less fast than you anticipated. So again, as I said, each column is stored on disk separately in a highly compressed form in the column store, and there's this new batch mode of query execution, which I'll say a little bit more about with a picture in a second. And then there's also a technique called segment elimination. So column store indexes are stored internally, broken up into 1 million row chunks. And those chunks are called row groups. They're also called segments. We use both of those terms. For each of these 1 million row groups, we keep around metadata for each column that stores the minimum and maximum value of that column within that 1 million row chunk. Okay? And we can use that metadata to skip the entire chunk if we can tell right away that nothing in there will qualify. So for example, if there's a date column, and the data is ordered by date in the column store index, then if you have a date range filter, you know, like date is greater than a constant, you can recognize that you may not even need to look in one of those chunks if you know nothing will qualify just by looking at the min and max. So that segment elimination is really effective at letting you skip large ranges of data. I mean, even if you do have to scan the data and process it, it's going to be pretty fast, but by skipping the entire chunk, that can make things even faster. So these are sort of the key things that make the column store index query processing faster. This is as I discussed, this concept of a segment or a row group is this 1 million row chunk. So drilling in a little more, the way that the data is stored for each of these row groups is that each column is stored in a separate blob. So the SQL Server supports blobs, binary large objects, and internally the column store index just uses that blob structure to store each 1 million row chunk of a column. Okay? And in addition, there's also the use of dictionaries. So certain columns that may be like a categorical column like that has a low number of discrete values, the system will decide to use a dictionary encoding for those. And so, for example, if you have a column with a bunch of strings in it, it'll put those strings in a dictionary and then replace a string with an ID number that references into the dictionary. And so that's a way to compress the data. And so the large structures that are stored on disk to represent the column store are these column segments and dictionaries, and they're all stored with blobs. So as I mentioned, the batch mode of query execution earlier, you might think of the batch mode of query execution as, you know, transporting large volumes of data at once, like a truckload of data zipping down the highway, whereas the older row mode of query execution is like one guy, you know, pushing some boxes on a push cart. So it's dramatically different in terms of efficiency. And I talked through this already, but here's an illustration of the batch object that I described. So again, a batch is an object that contains about 1,000 rows of data. And it contains each column in a separate vector of 64-bit words. It's like an array of 64-bit words. And there's also a bitmap of qualifying rows. So if a row has already been filtered out, you know, eliminated by some stage in query execution, then we'll flip a bit to say that row is no longer valid. And the use of this object structure combined with some changes in the way query execution works can literally reduce the CPU time to execute a query on the order of 7 to 40 times. So again, this is where a lot of the performance gains come from. Yes? How expensive is an insert? So I'll get to some of the limitations. Column store indexes are not updatable. So they're read-only. So when you create them, you can't insert anymore. The insert statement will error out. Now, if you want to update the data, you can drop the index and rebuild it after you do your update, or you can use partitions to switch in new data. So partition switching does work. So this is oriented towards data warehouse and data mart type operations, and most data warehouses and data marts have a nightly load cycle. So this most users can easily accommodate the fact that you can't update the data when the column store index is there. But for people who want to do real-time loading or trickle loading, they may not be able to use it unless they're willing to jump through some hoops. And I will talk a little bit about that later, about how you can accommodate some of the limitations with updates. Okay, but as you can imagine, updates are a frequently requested feature for this, and that's obviously something we will consider adding to the product in the future. But in SQL Server 2012, it's read-only. Okay. Yeah, the insert will fail. So you cannot insert data into a column store and into a table that has a column store index on it. All update DML, insert, update, delete, merge will error out. So the number one takeaway of this talk, again, remember that you want to make sure that your queries do most of the work in the batch mode of query execution. So I'll get back to a demonstration that shows that how you can recognize when most of the work is not happening in batch mode and how to fix it. So I mentioned earlier this idea of segment elimination. So here's a little illustration of segment elimination. So suppose that column one of this table purchase is the date column. And see the little query on the right there? It has a date range filter. So suppose we want to run that query. We don't want to have to scan row groups, or also called segments, unless we know for a fact that they contain data that might match the condition. So since that says date is greater than February 1st, 2012, if you look at the minimum and maximum values for those three row groups there in the little green table, well, take a look and you'll see that, you know, so the first row data is all in January, so that can't qualify. Next row has some data in February, the next row also has some data in February. So we can see that we can skip the first row group entirely and not have to process it at all. So the storage engine in SQL Server 2012, when it's scanning data in a column store, it applies these filters on the minimum and maximum value metadata and can skip entire row groups. Question? So that's a good question. He says that the data, the min and max values are overlapping. They're not completely disjoint. So does that mean we're not sorting the data? The answer is yes, we don't sort the data. So a column store index is not sorted. It's not like a B-tree. When you build the column store index, it does inherit the sort order from the underlying clustered B-tree index, if there is one. Or if you're building it on a heap, it loads it in the order that roughly the order the data was loaded into the heap. So oftentimes, like if you're loading data every night, then the data is partially sorted by date anyway. So even if the data is just partially sorted, you can still get this this segment skipping effect. Okay. So right. Right. So his point is that the key of the clustered index, you know, will be naturally sorted, and so the data in your column store index will also be sorted, but otherwise it won't be sorted by the other columns for the most part. And that's correct. However, there are certain correlations that can be useful, like if you have a table that has like order date and ship date, and you have a clustered index on order date, then it's still sorted by, almost completely sorted by ship date, because there's a correlation between those two columns. So you can sometimes get some benefit from that kind of thing. Yes. Yeah. If you had another key like department ID or something, it wouldn't be sorted by that. Correct. So here's some do's and don'ts for the column store. First, you should use a star schema, if at all possible. So those of you who are familiar with data warehousing, many of you are familiar with the concept of a star schema. So there's a fact table in the center and data and dimension tables associated with the fact table. Usually the fact table is by far the largest table. So normally what you want to do is use a column store index on the fact tables in a data warehouse with a star schema. The dimension tables, unless they're really huge, don't need to have a column store index. It really doesn't benefit you. You know, unless you've got a few million rows of data in a table, probably the column store index is overkill. So only put column stores on large tables. You should include every single column of the table in the column store index. So a column store index is essentially a second copy of all the data, so you include every single column. There's no notion of a key, as I said, in a column store index. It's not like a secondary B-tree. You have to explicitly list all the columns you want to appear in a column store, and you should list them all, unless for some reason you can't include them. So I recommend that you use integer surrogate keys to join on. So, for example, if you were using a natural key to join to a dimension table, like a license plate number that's a character string for used as a key for the automobile dimension or something like that, that's not a good idea because joins on string columns are not very fast with the column store. It's something we're working to correct, but in SQL Server 2012 RTM, it's not they're not very fast. So avoid joining on string columns if you can. And overall, you want to structure your queries as star joins with grouping and aggregation as much as possible. And that's kind of the sweet spot for the column store. Here's some don'ts. So as I said, don't join on string columns. Avoid filtering on string columns of the column store table. Filters on a string column that's part of a column store table don't get pushed down into the scan during query execution. They're done by another operator above the scan, and so they take a little bit more time. It's not too bad, though. It's not nearly as bad as the join issue, so it's not terrible, but in general, if you can create fact tables that have just integer surrogate keys and numeric measures and no categorical, string values, you're better off. So if you can avoid it, don't join pairs of large tables if you don't have to. In some situations, you have to, but in general, with a dimensional modeling approach, you have one giant fact table in the middle and a bunch of smaller dimensions. Column store works really well for that situation. Certain operations, which I'll talk more about, like not in, so in with a subquery, not in with a subquery, and outer join, none of those work too well because they all tend to defeat the batch mode of query execution. So you should either avoid them, or if you can't avoid them, I'll talk a little bit about workarounds later in the talk. And union all, using union all to combine multiple tables in a view and then querying over that, that also tends to defeat the batch mode of query execution. So I recommend you try not to do that, and I'll try to demonstrate that as well. So at the very beginning of the talk, I showed you just a basic join, with one dimension in the fact table on my laptop, and bam, it took a quarter of a second. Super fast. Very good. Then I changed the inner join to an outer join, and it was kind of slow. It wasn't as exciting. So what can we do to work around that issue, even though SQL Server 2012 RTM has this limitation that it doesn't do such a great job with outer joins? It's not bad, but it's not nearly as good as anticipated. Let's see how we can work around that. Okay. So this is a workaround for that outer join issue. So this query right here, let me zoom in a little bit. Let's take a look at the text there. So there's a common table expression that has a group by aggregate query inside of it. And notice that it's the original query, the outer join query we're trying to speed up, except that I changed outer join to just join. Okay? So that the common table expression, the with subquery there, just uses a regular join. So that subquery, we know that the query optimizer knows how to run, generate a plan that will execute that in batch mode. Okay? And then the final select in the query joins the result of that common table expression to the media dimension with an outer join. Okay? So this actually gets the same answer as the outer join query, but this is going to run lightning fast. Can anybody tell me why this is going to run fast? Any ideas? Exactly. So he said the bulk of the data is going to come from the first part, the common table expression. So exactly. So because of that runs in batch mode, that's going to run lightning fast. And it has a group by, so it's going to reduce the total data volume from 100 million rows plus down to just a few thousand rows. So once you've got a fairly small number of rows, then everything's fast. Even the row mode of query execution, the older mode, is going to be fast. So the remainder of the query will be processed in row mode, but because it's only processing a small number of rows, it'll be fast. So now, I said it's going to be fast, but let's see if it really is. Bam, so it just took a split second to run. Now, let's take a look at the query execution plan. Oops. Oops. All right. So this is the heavy lifting portion of the query. You see it does a column store index scan, and then it says it's doing a batch mode hash join. You see that up above it says it's doing a batch hash table build on media. So that batch hash table build, that's an indicator that piece of the query plan, that hash join, is all running in the batch mode. So, and we can look a little further, like if I hover here, it says that the hash join is running in actual execution mode batch. Okay, that's what we're looking for. And now after the aggregation here, see there's only 5,593 rows coming out. So we've winnowed down that huge number of rows, that 100 million rows, down to just about 6,000 rows. So it doesn't matter that the rest of the query is running in batch. All that's going to be fast because it's a small volume of data. So again, if there's one thing you get out of this talk, it's that you should look at your query plans and make sure that everything's running in batch mode. Or not everything, but the bulk of the work is being done in batch mode. Once you've winnowed the data volume down to a smaller number of rows, then the rest of the query running in row mode is fine because it'll still be super fast. Question? Yeah? Okay, the question is about compression. He's asking if the compression in the column store index is by default. And the answer is yes. So the column store index is compressed. It's usually compressed by about 7 to 1 compared to raw data. You can't control how the compression works. It's just always compressed. And it has its own internal compression heuristics that decide how to do the compression. So you don't have to say anything. It's always there. Okay, so that was our first demo of how to work around a problem with the column store index and get the level of performance up. So obviously, if you're using a report generation tool or something that's generating SQL that you can't control, you really can't do this workaround. So if you're using a third-party reporting tool that generates lots of outer joins, you're kind of out of luck. It still will probably be faster than the old mode of query execution because the scanning of the column store index will be a lot faster, but the amount of CPU that it takes to actually run the query will be comparable to what it was without column store indexes. But if you can hand write your queries and you don't have too many reports that you're writing and you really want to tune one of them that uses outer join, then you could consider something like this. So I mentioned already that in and exists with subqueries can prevent batch mode. But one good thing is that in with a list of constants typically works fine. That typically gives you batch mode execution. So let me give you a demo of the in and exists problem and how to work around that. Okay, so yeah, those of you who've done data warehousing before, you may have seen that in some cases that some of your power users, if they're writing SQL by hand, they may create temporary tables, like temporary dimensions, like a study, what I sometimes call a study group. So in this example, what I have done is I created this table called media study group that has just 1,000 rows of the media dimension. So it's a subset of the media dimension. And so there's two equivalent queries here. This one says it wants, it's selecting from purchase where the media ID is in select media ID from media study group. So it's a nested select there in using the in operator. And then this is an equivalent query using exists in a correlated subquery. Okay, both of these basically do the same thing. So I'll just run this one. So it's taking a while. Well, that's an indicator that it's not running in batch mode. Okay, because if it was running in batch mode, we know it would probably be a sub-second time. So it took 7 seconds. This one, I won't run it. It'll take a similar amount of time. But let's look at the query execution plan for that first one that I just ran. Okay. So can anybody see there's something missing here right away that is a giveaway that things aren't good? What's missing? The batch hash table build operator. It's doing a hash join, but since there's no batch hash table build operator, that's a giveaway that it's not running in batch mode. And again, we can see that more clearly if we just hover the mouse pointer, say, over that hash operator. It says its actual execution mode is row. So, what can we do about this particular situation? Well, thinking back to that first demo that I did, the first workaround example I did with the outer join, you know, we can try to do something similar, but maybe there's something even easier than that. We can just rewrite the query in a way that doesn't use the in or exists operator. We can just use a join in this case. So this query, yeah, right there, is equivalent to those other queries, but it just uses a regular join, an equal join on p.mediaid equals m.mediaid. So, boom, that one ran instantly. All right. So, you know, everyone has their own style, how they like to write queries. Some people like to use in or correlated subqueries when they might be able to use a join, but heck, you know, if all it takes to get the answer that quickly is a small syntactic variation in your query, you know, use the regular equi-join. So another encouraging thing is that query is going to run really fast because it uses in with just a list of constants. So as long as that's not a subquery after the in, things work better. So you see that ran instantaneously when I ran it. Anybody have any questions at this point? Yes?
Do you get any of those missing
Do you get missing index hints for column stores? And the answer is no, you don't. So it's, because there's some limitations with column stores, you know, certain, you can't update them, especially, you know, automatically recommending them may not make sense yet. But yeah, pardon me? Put a caveat there, yeah. Yes? So the question is, are there plans to put some of these optimizations into the optimizer so that you don't have to do this? Yes. In fact, some of the code is already written. So it's just that we didn't have it done by SQL Server 2012. So in the future, you won't have to do this stuff. And I should say that column store indexes are the future of data warehouse query processing and data warehouse storage. I mean, we're moving rapidly in the direction of, if you have a data warehouse and you have a large table in that data warehouse, you will use a column store index, and that will be the only representation of the data, the only copy of the data. And you know, we're all our future work to speed up query processing and data warehousing is heavily oriented around the column store index and batch processing. So, you know, as I said, this is like a once in a career change in technology. You know, we got the foundation laid in SQL Server 2012, but we're pushing really hard to advance this in the engineering team. Yes. Okay, the question is, are there external factors that could cause a query to switch from batch to row? Unfortunately, yes. So if sometimes, like if a hash join spills, so if a hash build can't get enough memory, it'll spill to disk, like onto a disk file. And when that happens with column store hash join with the batch mode, it'll revert to row mode. So it doesn't happen very often. It's pretty rare, but it can happen. Right. And so that's why in the tooltip, it showed the actual execution mode and the estimated execution mode. So you could have estimated execution mode of batch and actual of row, and that could happen because of a spill. Yes. So another thing that can defeat batch mode query execution is the union all operator. And the union all operator, well, one thing you might consider doing is to work around the fact that column stores can't be updated. You could create a union all view between a read-only table that had the column store on it, which might contain a large amount of historical data. Okay. And a smaller table that was called a delta table or a differential file that just contained your recently inserted data. And then put a view over that and just query the view. Sounds good, right? Well, unfortunately, in many cases, batch mode execution will not work on the column store table if you do that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how you can work around that with another demo. And the basic idea is to manually rewrite the query so you query the read-only portion, the column store index table, summarize that data and group it down to a much smaller number of rows, and that will run in batch mode, and then query the delta table or differential file separately, combine the results of those, and run another query over the top of that rolls up the final answer. So it's a little tricky, but if you have a reasonably small number of reports, you can do this by hand. So this is also known as a local global aggregation, and actually the query optimizer does this internally sometimes, but you can do it by hand in this case. So this is a demo of a workaround with the union all. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to create a table called Delta Purchase that just has one row in it, and using a select into, and obviously that's an updatable table. Now I'm going to create a view, V Purchase, that's a union of Purchase, which is that large 100 million row fact table, and that tiny little updatable table, the delta table, delta purchase. So, well, I said that union all used inside a view tends to defeat batch mode, but it's not quite that simple. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So this query is just a basic star join query with grouping and aggregation on top of that view, which is a union of the updatable delta table and the large read-only column store index table. Bam, it ran really fast. So that had to be batch mode, right? So in fact, it was. If you look at the query execution plan, you can see right there, a batch hash table build. and it's scanning the column store index, which is the index on the large branch of the union all. Okay? So that's good, but unfortunately, it's not consistent. If I change the query a little bit, it's not going to work. So here's another query. It's a three-way join. It joins two dimensions to the view instead of just the one. I'm going to run this one. So you can see it didn't return right away, so clearly it's not running in batch mode. It's going to take a little while. While we're waiting, does anybody have any questions? I think you had a question. Did you get your question answered yet? Okay, the question is, we're saving CPU with this batch mode of query execution, but are we paying some other cost for that? Actually, we're saving CPU and I.O. and RAM. The only cost really is building the index in the first place. It's a little bit more expensive to build a column store than a B-tree, but not a lot. It takes only like 50% longer to build a column store than it takes to build a B-tree. So that's the only downside the only downsides I can think of are that it's not updatable and it takes a little while to build the index. Yeah. Can we do an online index build? No, online index build doesn't work on column store, as far as I know. Yeah. So normally, you know, because as I said, this is suitable for a situation where you have a data mart or a data warehouse as a nightly load process, or where you can switch in a new partition every time you want to add data. In either case, you can use this. And so in those cases, you don't really need online index rebuild, because if you have a nightly window where you're doing update, obviously you're not going to be querying the data that time anyway. So. But yeah, you can't. This is not an online operation to build a column store. So let's see. This one. So I said this didn't run in batch mode. It took 38 seconds. So you can work around this issue where that in the following way. Right. Instead of using that view and just writing your queries the way they looked before. You can use multiple branches where you have one branch that queries the large read-only table. Here, that common table expression references purchase directly and not the view. So this is just a basic star join on top of with inner join operations on top of a column store index table without using any union all. So that's going to run fast. I'm just going to run that subquery just because I selected it. So that ran really fast. So that branch of the query is touching the bulk of the data, and it's going to run fast. And then I can summarize the data in the differential file, which is delta purchase. This is also going to run fast because there's not a lot of data in there. There's only one row in there, so that ran really fast too. And then the idea is just we can combine those results and then do a roll-up over the at the end that does a final grouping and aggregation to produce the final result. So this long query here, although it's long, it's fairly systematic to understand how to create it. But if I run that, that ran really fast as well. Okay. Any questions at this point? Yes. Okay, so the question is, have we done anything to optimize common table expression queries? And there's nothing significantly different from 2008 R2 with respect to common table expressions, no. The biggest thing I've seen with common table expressions is that, like, if you reference them twice later in the query, that it'll double the work. It won't like, save the answer and then use it twice. It won't spool the result. Actually, the logic for processing common table expressions is identical to processing view definitions or subqueries. So Okay. Okay. Yes. Thanks. So, all right. So that the basic idea: divide and conquer. You know, if you can run a query that just touches the large table that has a column store index, you can run the whole thing in batch mode and produce a small set of results. You can combine that with the updatable delta table in a different subquery. That's a way to work around this issue of union all not queries not running as fast as you would expect. Yes. Right. So the question is, if you roll in a piece of a column store index with partitioning, how exactly does that work? So the basic idea is that if you want to add data, if you have an append only situation, like you're adding data like once, you know, like three times a day or something to a large fact table, and you don't want to drop the index and then do your update and then rebuild, because doing that loses all the work that you did to build the column store index and the older data, what you can do is partition the table and then just switch in a partition every time you want to insert data into the table. And so the column store index has to be partitioned the same way as the underlying B-tree or heap. And so just like any other index, you want to have a partition-aligned secondary index with your column store so you can switch in. So the physical structure of all the partitions has to be identical. So I showed how to work around this union all problem. Here's another one. I'm not going to demo this. This is an unfortunate little thing, but it turns out that scalar aggregates, a scalar aggregate is an aggregate without a group by. Scalar aggregates don't run in batch mode. So, you know, why did we do that? I don't know. We just didn't get around to it. So obviously, we want to fix this in the future. But in SQL Server 2012, you would find that simple query, select count star from dbo.purchase, takes 1.2 seconds, and it doesn't run in batch mode. It's still pretty fast. It's still probably several times faster than it would have been on a B-tree, because it has to scan a lot less data, because it only picks one column and scans that. But it does all the work in row mode, so it's a little slower than it might be. The workaround is you can count, you know, you can do a group by count query and then roll up the results. So that group by in the common table expression, that group by query will run in batch mode, and then we roll up the results. So ironically, that more complicated query below that gets the same answer as the one above takes like a tenth of a second versus 1.2 seconds. So you got to ship it at some time. You know, you can't get everything done when you want to. So the question is, do we expect to have fixes to some of these things in a service pack? We're considering having some of these things improved in a service pack. I can't tell you exactly which ones. A lot of them are already fixed in the code. But you know the way things are, we have to stabilize the code like 6 months before we ship it and everything. So I can't tell you the exact dates that when we'll ship these fixes. We're considering some of the fixes in a service pack. Obviously, stuff like making it updatable, you know, which has a whole new functional surface area, we're probably not going to do that in a service pack. But some simple, you know, query performance fixes like this may come before the next version. Is the batch size configurable? No. Just it's a fixed size. So another issue that we've seen is that if you have multiple distinct aggregates in a query, it doesn't speed up as much as you would anticipate. And so I'm going to show you a query that has multiple distinct aggregates in it. And unfortunately, the query plan that's chosen uses what's called a spool, which is it runs a subquery, it runs a subplan, and it saves the result in a temporary file, and then it uses that temporary file later. And in general, spools are not good for query performance. They tend to defeat parallelism, and it takes a long time to write the spool because only one thread does all the work. So there is a workaround that I can show you, which is kind of interesting. Here it is. Let's see. So here's a query that has multiple distinct aggregates. Okay, by the way, multiple distinct aggregates have never worked very well in SQL Server. This is no worse. All these things where I'm showing you the performance problems, they're no worse than they used to be. In fact, they're probably quite a bit better than they used to be because scanning the column store index is faster, right? It's just that you notice the difference so much when the batch mode doesn't kick in. So here's, I'm running that query with those two distinct aggregates, and it's taking quite a while. It's not getting batch mode plan, and it's also using a spool, so it's going to take a little while. And then while that's running, okay, that took 16 seconds. This is an equivalent query that doesn't have any spool, and it runs mostly in batch mode. Now, here's an interesting thing. See, this query plan, the plan for that query has a spool in it, and I'll show it to you. And it only scans the fact table one time. Oops, I don't want to run it again. Kill it. Okay. You see on the far right, it has the column store index scan. And it has a batch hash table build. That's all good. It's a batch mode. That's nice. But see this spool right here? That spool, you notice, see the little yellow circles with two lines in them? That means it's parallel. Okay. Notice that now that we did the spool, everything after the spool doesn't have the little yellow circle with the two lines. That means it runs serial on one thread. So the time it takes to run that table spool is significant. Then everything else is serial after that, and it doesn't run in batch mode, so it kind of doesn't work too well. So let's see what we can do to make things better. But the interesting thing is, we only scan the fact table one time. It used to be that everything was I/O bound, and we did our best to try to not scan large tables multiple times. So the workaround I'm going to show you actually goes against that idea. It scans the table twice, right? So this common table expression, the basic idea is we run two queries that compute, each of the two queries computes a different distinct aggregate, and then we join the results together on the group by column. So this one is the same as the one above, except it only has a single distinct count. And then this one also only has a single distinct count. And then we combine the results by joining the two common table expressions on the date column, which is the grouping column. So let's run this. Bam, it's done. Okay, so that's interesting. It used to be that a scan of a table was an extremely expensive operation that you wanted to avoid. I just showed you I scanned the entire table twice, and it was order of magnitude faster than scanning it once with the old spool plan. So anyway, these are some kinds of workarounds you can use to speed things up if you really have to tune queries. So any questions at this point? So one good bit of good news that I can share with you is that SQL Server 2012 runs queries that have one distinct aggregate and one or more non-distinct aggregates in batch mode without any spill. Okay, so and that's actually an improvement even for the row mode of query execution. A single distinct ag combined with a single non-distinct ag used to have a spool, and now it doesn't anymore. so that we improve the query optimizer to avoid the spool in that case. So that concludes the demos. Now I want to, well, the bulk of the demos, I should say. Now I want to go and talk about physical database design and loading and index management with the column store. So I've talked through this and answered some of the questions, but when you add data to a column store, one way to do it is to drop the index, do your updates, and then rebuild the index. In general, that works just fine. Now, I can create an index on this 100 million row table in 6 minutes on my laptop. So if you have a nightly load process, the time it takes to rebuild the index is usually reasonable and you can handle it. If you have a really huge amount of data, like you have billions of rows in a table and you might not be able to rebuild the index overnight, it might take too long, then you can consider using partitioning and say switch in one new partition a day, use a partition-aligned index, partition-aligned column store index. So then when you load a staging table once a day that has 1 day worth of data, build your column store index on that and switch it in. So not all scenarios can handle this. Sometimes people have to update some of the rows in their fact table, like to correct bad data or something like that. But if you just really have an append-only situation and you never have to correct old data, you can do this. So partition switching is fully supported with column stores. And so one thing you could do is if you have a daily load scenario, what you do is keep an empty partition on either end of your table at all times. And then once a night, you'd split the empty partition into two, make a slot available, and switch in your new partition with the partition-aligned column store. And then in the steady state, you always have one empty partition at either end of the table. This is a standard approach for using partitioning. You don't want to split you can't split a partition that has a physical column store on it. That doesn't work. Okay. So, and also in general, you don't want to split partitions that have data in them because it can be pretty slow. You're better off splitting empty partitions. So this avoids the costly drop and rebuild that I described if you have a really large data volume. Yes? That's a really good question. So the question is it a problem if your partitions are less than a million rows? So segments are a million rows by design because we want to minimize the overhead of looking at the metadata for the segment. You know, it's like an appropriate size chunk. So if you have partitions that only have 100,000 rows or less, then there will be some performance degradation because all those partitions will only have one segment inside of them, right? So in general, I would say if you have less than 100,000 rows per partition, you might want to use a larger partition width so you gang together more partitions into one so you have large segments inside the column store. Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah. Segments with less than 100,000 rows, you will start to see some performance degradation. Now, you can, if you're willing to use this union all workaround that I described earlier to write your queries so that you get with local global aggregation so that the bulk of the work is done in batch mode, you can do trickle loading with column stores by using a master table, which is read-only, that's the large table, and then a small delta table or differential file that has the recently inserted data. So I don't think I'm going to demo it because I already demoed it with the union all demo. But you can do trickle load this way if you're willing to write your reporting queries in a very stylized way with this local global aggregation. One thing I recommend is to avoid use of non-clustered B-trees on your fact tables. So it used to be the case that if you had a fact table, maybe you got a fact table with 40 columns, maybe lots of your queries only touched 15 of those columns and you knew which 15, okay? It was common to create a non-clustered B-tree that included just those 15 columns. It's called a covering index, right? Well, a column store is kind of like a universal covering index, because you only have to read the columns that you touch, right? And so if you have, one thing I saw with a customer that came into our lab was that they had a clustered B tree on their table, and then they had five non-clustered B trees that were different covering indexes. And then they added the column store index, but the presence of those five non-clustered B tree indexes confused the optimizer so that it was quite often not choosing the column store but trying to use one of these non-clustered B trees instead. But that was much, it turned out that that was much slower than if it had used the column store. So what we did is drop all those non-clustered B trees, and then everything started working great. So in general, you can save a lot of space and a lot of index maintenance time by getting rid of these non-clustered B trees. And moreover, you might even have better performance. Okay? So in general, the column store, the query optimizer chooses the appropriate index based on cost-based, you know, query optimization. And it'll choose the right index, whether it's a B tree or the column store. But more choices just gives it more chances to make a mistake. So seriously consider dropping all your non-clustered B trees and just having a clustered B tree and one non-clustered column store on the fact table that includes all the columns. Another limitation with the column store index in SQL Server 2012 is that some data types are not supported in the column store. So specifically, numeric and decimal with more than 18 digits is not allowed. So we found quite a few customers have, like, they'll use like a numeric 22,2 or something like that, where it just, but all the data in the table has much less than 18 digits. Just to happen to declare it with a larger number of digits. So in that situation, you may have to reload the table. You may have to rebuild the table with a different data type, change it to 18,2. Because you can't include anything with more than 18 digits in the column store. Unique identifier or GUID, that data type is not supported in the column store. So you may need to modify your data somehow. Like maybe you'll need to replace those unique identifiers with a string or with a big int or something like that. You can't fit a GUID in a big int, but you may be able to change the logic of your ETL to replace the GUID with some other data. Date time offset has to have a precision of 2 or less, or it can't be in the column store. And other things like hierarchy ID, you know, that's not also supported in the column store, so you may need to convert that to a string, say, or just omit it from the column store. Column store index build can be somewhat time-consuming. In most cases, it works fine, and it's reasonably fast, as I described. But for some people, especially if they've got very wide tables, like if you have a 200-column table and the rows are super wide, it can take a while to build the column store on that. So the index build process, the way it works is it uses one thread per segment or row group. So that a segment is a 1 million row chunk. So as it's building the index, it assigns a million rows to each thread, and that thread needs to hold the entire million rows in main memory, plus it needs another substantial amount of scratch space in order to build the column store index for that million row chunk. And so it takes a lot of memory. And what will happen is that if there's not enough memory available, the index build process will throttle down parallelism, use less and less threads so that it has enough memory to at least build one row group at a time. So if you're having this problem, you can consider, if you find out that only one thread or two threads are being used to do your index build and you have a lot more threads available, one thing you consider is you can set min server memory higher. It may happen that if you start an index build right after you restarted SQL Server, it might not have had enough time to grab memory from the operating system, and sometimes the index build will not get enough memory. Also, the default resource governor setting only allows 25% of the memory to be allocated to a single query or index build. So you can change that to 50%, say. So that may give you more memory. Obviously, you can add memory to the hardware. You can add more memory to your server if you have the opportunity to do that. You can leave out some of the columns. You can normalize some of the columns out into another dimension, say a dimension table. Or you can, if you have a super wide table and some of the columns are not used together very often, you can actually create, you know, you can vertically partition the table into, say, two or more tables. And there's a, this DMV, DM exec query memory grants. If you look at that while the index build is running, it has an entry that shows you the DOP that the index build is running at. So that's one of the best ways to figure out what the DOP of an index build is. Question? Does the memory wind up being more of a bottleneck than the CPU? To some extent, yes, because you know, it reduces the CPU utilization, the number of cores that are doing the index build in order to make sure that there's enough memory for each core to do its job. Yeah. Question? So the question was about index views, and do they have some, you know, can that confuse the query optimizer too? Usually index views aren't an issue. Some people use index views on their fact tables to, you know, and we actually recommend going away from that and just letting the column store index do its job, because the column stores can process fine-grained detailed data so fast that you don't really need to pre-summarize the data into an index view. So in general, the index views aren't an issue because of that. So now I talked about making the column store index build fast. Another issue is that you might not have enough memory to build the column store index at all. You might get an error. So in some cases, we've seen that if customers with really big data and small amounts of memory, that they try to build this column store index and it'll error out either right when you start building the index, it'll error out and say it can't get enough memory, or it'll get enough memory to get started and get like halfway through it and then error out when it runs out of memory during index build execution. So in either case, similar advice to what I said before about speeding up index builds applies. You can try to give more memory to that operation by reducing parallelism explicitly with a max DOP hint, for example, or adding more memory, you know, changing the resource governor setting to give more memory and so forth. So I have a little more material, but our time is almost over. So I'm going to, this is a good place to break. So by the way, I was going to talk about how to make sure you're getting proper segment elimination and teach you how to do some tricks with segment elimination. All the material that I talked about today is available online on the TechNet Wiki. So there's a column store tuning guide on the TechNet Wiki. So this is your reading homework. So to sort of reinforce this lecture, please go and read this material on the TechNet Wiki about column store tuning. And there's some additional material that I didn't get to cover in today's talk that's also there. There's also a frequently asked questions document that has a bunch of answers to questions that people ask often about the column store. And I gave a talk, more introductory talk on column stores last year at TechEd, and the video is on Channel 9, and there's a link to that video. If you look on Channel 9 for this talk, DBI 312 on column stores, you can see a more basic talk about column stores. This database actually has some customer data in it. We are not allowed to give it out to customers. We're allowed to demo it, but I'm not allowed to give it out to the world. So the tuning guide on the internet has the scripts, but it doesn't have the data. Yeah. All right. So thank you very much. And, please, please be sure to fill out an evaluation, and I hope you've enjoyed Tech Ed this year, and please go home and try it. If you haven't already tried it, try the Column Store Index. It's really phenomenal. As I said, it's the next generation of query execution and storage for data warehousing. Thank you.